When most of us think of Metrorail, we think that there are these 10 miles of elevated transportation that we wish actually went further and to more places. But there is one woman in South Florida who sees much more than just elevated trains. She sees what's under the Metrorail. And rather than what's not there, she sees what could be there. So I am really happy to welcome the founder and president of Friends of the Underline, Meg Daly. Meg, tell us about the Underline and why you started this organization, Friends of the Underline.
First of all, I want to say thank you so much for having us here. I've always loved this radio station. And as you know, I've been in Miami for a very long time. Right. And I think that sort of takes me to the place of discovering Miami. I'm in my mid-50s. I've lived here my whole life, and I had a bike accident a few years ago that I couldn't drive. I broke both of my elbows.
Oh my gosh.
And it's difficult to get around Miami when you can't drive.
Yeah, I mean, we're attached to our cars, most of us.
And a lot of people say we're car-centric, and that's something we're working on. But back 3 years ago, I had to get to physical therapy in the Grove, and I lived in the Gables. And I sort of got sick of hitching rides from my husband, my dad, my son. And I took the train one day. From the UM station down to Coconut Grove, and then I walked, I would say, the additional half mile in July, right about the same time we're in now.
Right.
And I realized that it wasn't that hot because I was in the shade of the train tracks. The other thing was there was a lot of land there. I really didn't appreciate it because when you're driving on US 1 South, you know, you're trying to get to where you go. You don't look at what's over there under the train tracks.
No, and I think if you imagine anything, you think it's going to be a depository for cigarettes or cups that people have tossed from, you know, Metrorail.
Which, unfortunately, is what happens. And it's also a depository for what gets thrown out of car windows. And the third thing I thought was I'm the only one out here. And it was 8:30 in the morning, and I've been to the High Line in New York. I don't know if
you've been. I'm not familiar with that, but maybe you can tell us about it.
The High Line is really one of those first groundbreaking linear parks, and it's an above-ground park, and they call it the Park in the Sky.
Okay.
It's on the west side of New York in the Chelsea and Meatpacking District, and that's a pretty gritty area.
Uh-huh.
And 10 years ago, this above-ground train track was going to be torn down. And these two young guys in their 20s said, we don't want it torn down because we've climbed up there, and even though it's derelict, it's flowering. So wildflowers were growing up there. So they decided to save the train tracks, which they did. And then with the help of great groups like the Design Trust, they figured out what to do with it. And right now it is a park wrapped in an economic engine.
Wow.
Really has converted and transformed that part of New York City. $3 billion worth of new real estate development along the mile, which is fascinating. And it's right now, it's a premier address. I live next to the High Line. And they have 4 million visitors a year, which is only second to MoMA. So now it's a cultural destination as well.
Okay.
And so I've been to the High Line because both of our children live there with their spouses and significant others. And I thought, wow, this land should be Miami's High Line. Oh, that'll be easy, which really goes to show how little I knew.
And yet you're still here, and you now have a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and you have partnerships with a slew of both public and private organizations to work toward, I guess, turning our Underline into the local equivalent of New York's High Line.
Yeah, and you know, when I sort of got started in this process, I really didn't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And that's what fascinates people is how did you know where to go with a big idea and no plan? Especially when it's public-private, because I come out of the private sector, and I know that critical path when you own your own business, how to get from A to Z.
Right.
What we discovered was this land is wholly owned by Miami-Dade County.
Okay.
It's owned by Transit. Before that, it was owned by FECI, which is the train.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s, the train sold it to Transit to build the above-ground Metro Rail.
All right.
Way back in the day, early 80s, there was an original plan to turn this into a linear park, and it would have been the first of its kind.
Wow.
That plan got scuttled because of lack of funding. Fast forward to today, We ended up in the office of the transit department saying, hey, we have this great idea. And they said, that is a wonderful idea. You should go do it.
You know, you should go do it. Right. Okay. Wow. And yet you are partnered with them.
We've come a long way since that day.
Okay.
I would say the moment when things really opened up for us was working with Miami-Dade County Parks and Recreation. This corridor is on their master plan for connected parks throughout the county. And one of the things that they've looked at is, how do we get people from parks without getting in a car to go there? And this will be the first of the county's kind of not needing a car to go to a great park.
Take Metro Rail.
Exactly.
I hadn't even thought of that. Even as I looked over the entire website, theunderline.org, it never even crossed my mind about taking public transportation to get to this beautiful public park. And I think maybe I have a little heads up because I've been through your website and read about what the goal is. Mm-hmm. And you've described it with the High Line, but what actually is the vision for this 10 miles of property underneath Metro Rail? What do you see it becoming?
Well, I'll start with what my idea was, because I'm a park nut, and I really thought it could be sort of a dear, special, fragile place where you have specimen plants and it becomes an arboretum. And then I really quickly changed that perspective, because this is really a working transportation solution.
Right.
And there is a path underneath Metro Rail now. It's called the M Path. And it was a maintenance road, however, is a designated greenway, which is good for us that we don't have to go through that process. But we've had a series of public meetings, one last April and then a series just in June. And the public has told us what they want. And they want two paths. They want one for bicyclists and one for pedestrians separated. And believe it or not, if you put pedestrians and bicyclists on the same path, that's called potential conflict, because they can run into each other.
Yeah,
they
I
go different speeds,
sure.
have different, you know, need sets. They want lighting. There is none. They want us to use native landscaping, which we are. They want water fountains. They want bathrooms. They want public art. I mean, the list is very long.
It sounds magnificent.
But that's what we're doing.
Okay.
We're doing all of those things. They want safer conditions when they cross the street. One of the reasons 85% of people in Miami don't bike, not because it's hot. Mm-hmm. They don't bike because they think it's unsafe.
Sure.
And, you know, Miami was built for the car. And and if you have a software system, you know what it takes to have to retrofit your software system for the new future. And we really think that we're having to retrofit Miami for alternative forms of transportation.
This is a huge project.
It's a big vision.
Yeah. And now you're talking about it as though it is a done deal. It's happening. Is it? How much of it is approved? Mm-hmm. What other permits do you need and from whom to make this actually start to be constructed?
So now I'm going to go back to my chronology.
Okay, great.
There is sort of a story here and a narrative which started from where do you go? And from transit, we ended up with parks and a wonderful partner. And then we also partnered with the University of Miami. And they kind of became our lab for visioning what could be. And then you're able to invite other agencies in so they can buy into that collective vision. And we came out of that process that was over a year ago with a lot of excitement and enthusiasm and no money.
Okay. Just that one
little
detail.
Just that
little
thing.
Yeah.
And then we really thought about it. We had to make sure that we had buy-in from the municipalities that this fronts.
Sure.
This is county land, but it also goes through three municipalities and one village. So we got endorsements from City of Miami, Coral Gables, South Miami, Village of Pinecrest. We got the last public endorsement was from the county, and that was, 8 months ago. But we were well into moving along. We also realized since we had so much momentum, and that's really proven out by, I don't know, Facebook likes. If anybody's listening, you can like us on the underline MIA, same on Twitter. And really just this general noise of make it happen.
Right.
And the things that people wanted were alternative transportation. They wanted more green open space. They felt like we're squeezed out. We only have 3 acres of green space per 1,000 residents here. Portland has 16. So they're screaming for green space. They're also screaming for transit-oriented development. mm-hmm. because it's a sustainable solution for development. You're building next to transit so right. that people can live, work, and play near mass transit.
Right.
This has been a catalyst for a lot of discussions of what next steps are for mass transit. I'm going into a fly-in in Denver in a couple of weeks to really study what they've done there. The MPO is looking hard at funding mass transit solutions. So, and we're also looking at, believe it or not, where do we go next without even beginning? Right. As if 10 miles isn't enough.
Yeah, well, because it's a whole paradigm shift for mm-hmm. one thing. But it makes so much sense when you talk about it, about attracting construction and development near where the transportation is, rather than forcing us to have to take a car and commute mm-hmm. for, you know, whether it's 10 miles or, you know, 60 miles and spending anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour or more in the car.
And it's that non-productive downtime.
Yeah.
And we're really focusing on getting people to walk and bike just that short distance to the train station. A lot of people, when we go through 8 stations, a lot of people still drive a short distance, park, and take the train.
Right.
So we want to work at that mile to the station of connections so they can get there safely, even across US 1. So we realized, you know, we really had to get a big plan
right.
so that it's not me framing what WOW is or you thinking of what it should be. Is it peonies versus palms versus pine?
Mm-hmm.
And we went through a competitive process. We raised funds from those 3 municipalities I mentioned, Miami, Coral Gables, South Miami, as well as the Knight Foundation, gave us a sizable matching grant. And they're also thought leaders, and they would buoy us in terms of just their brilliant thought and
right.
propel us along. Miami Foundation as well, focusing now on transportation, sea level rise in public realm, mm-hmm. as well as the Health Foundation of South Florida. You know, believe it or not, if you just move an additional 10 minutes a day, you're healthier.
Yep. That's what we hear over and over and over again, and it doesn't have to be in a gym class.
Exactly. And, you know, you look at now, most people are now live in cities. Our country is not rural anymore.
Right.
And one of the things I love about New York, one of the things I love about well-planned cities is you have a reason to walk because there's things to look at on the street as you know, going from here to there. And, aha, I just arrived in a park because I'm going from here to there. I arrived at something beautiful along the way.
And there are also things within walking distance mm-hmm. that suit your need.
And there's pent-up demand for what we're doing. Going back to the Knight Foundation, they flew me to Copenhagen a year ago so I could study how Copenhagen rethought themselves 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were getting hit riding their bikes by cars. Sounds familiar. And there was an outcry saying that this is not acceptable anymore. And I thought, that sounds familiar as well. So Miami is sort of where Copenhagen was
right.
40 years ago, and I think we're at a tipping point.
It's interesting. I'm wondering how much of getting the city over that tip, over that point, is not as much getting the leaders, because it sounds like you have a lot of leaders
mm-hmm.
who are in this with you, but changing the residents' mindset from, we're a driving city.
Yeah.
It's just, it's habit to say that. And really getting the message across that we don't have to be. We can be a walking and biking city.
And we can, and it can be done now. It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who bike commute every day, and, I mean, they work hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make this available to people from the age of 8 to 80 for them to want to do it as well. And I like to ask the question, you know, how many people in the room rode their bike to school if they grew up in Miami? And if yeah. they're my age, you know, they raise their hand.
Right.
Then you say, how many of you let your children walk or bike to school? And most of them don't. And it's really because of a safety condition.
That was, and how much of that is just traffic safety and concerns about getting hit by a car? How much of it is safety due to crime?
You know, I think most of it's fear-based car versus human conflict.
Okay.
And some people ask about this particular corridor, it's not lit. And certainly if you light a space and if you activate a space, potential crime incidents drop.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not, this is not a very unsafe corridor, despite the fact that it's
right.
not lit and it's not activated. So we went through a competitive process, And we had some of the best design teams in the world apply and compete for the commission for the master planning of the future Underline. And the team that was selected is the same one that did the High Line in New York. And I was not on the selection committee. We had people much more qualified than mm-hmm. I am. But I did sit out on the meetings, and they were kind of heads and shoulders above the rest, and their deep commitment to what this could be. And they've taken to heart every comment that we've gotten from the public meetings. We also did surveys online. We handed them out at 18 events last spring. We worked very hard on very, very little, and because we want to make sure that all this money goes to planning and not to administration.
Right.
And we'll have our final public meetings in September.
Okay.
And that's where we present to everybody who will show up, and I hope many of you do, September 24th and 26th. And the 24th is the Holiday Inn at University of Miami, and the 26th is the downtown library. Free, it'll be on Eventbrite a good month in advance. The last meetings we had 200 people at each one, very well attended and with great comments back. Once we get that plan done, we have to then get FTA approval, which is the Federal Transit Authority that oversees transit. So these are all my bosses.
Right.
I have four mayors, four vice mayors, 34 commissioners, and lots of public agencies that I report to.
Do you take your blood pressure every day just to be sure it's under control?
Fortunately, so far, they've all been really great to work with.
Because this is really good for the city, the communities, the county. There's really not a downside that I can see anyway. But mm-hmm. I just want to remind the listeners, we're speaking with Meg Daly, the president and founder of Friends of the Underline. And we're talking about transforming this 10 miles of land underneath Metrorail into a linear park, a walking trail, a biking trail, a form of transportation, a public art,
yep.
and a natural habitat mm-hmm. for plant life and trees, and somewhere that will not only be somewhere for us to go, but something that will attract development and tourism yep. and impact our economy as well.
Well, the last three things you touched on, the horticultural component, Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden is our horticultural consultant, and they have given us access to four fabulous horticulturists. Mm-hmm. We have also documented an all-volunteer effort. Thank you, all you volunteers. We love you. Close to 300 trees that are existing in the Brickell Corridor by species, by size, health, and so forth, because we want to honor what's currently there.
Right.
You talked about art. I haven't really jumped in. We're very excited. We got a really prestigious grant called Art Place America, $200,000, and it's part of our planning process as well as art. And this is not, you know, your grandmother's art. This is getting the community together, kids, parents, families, adults, all ages, to come together and have artistic events to activate the space as we go through this process, as well as potential permanent installations and probably in the near future temporary. We want to start building in the fall of 2016, and we're focusing on the Brickell Corridor for that. The reason we picked Brickell is there's so much building and density in place. There's a young population that's very vocal that we want you here. Mm-hmm. There's a shortage of green space that's very hard to walk and bike. And this will be Brickell's backyard.
How long will it take once you actually start?
Mm-hmm.
How long would it take to do 10 miles of Underline?
We keep on setting these totally unrealistic goals and objectives that we keep reaching and attaining. So I'm going to throw it out there. We would love to have this done in 6 years.
Okay.
I have a reason for that. I think there's a lot of plans that have been done in Miami that just sort of sit on the shelves. And we don't want to dust this plan off in 10 years.
Right.
We need it now. And there's big demand. There's big need. Safety conditions notwithstanding. But even for public art, for public space, for reconnecting to our community, not being divided by the road grid, but making the road grid service us.
Yeah.
And we really need this. And we're going to do it.
I know you will. Let's talk about the money.
Sure.
Now, you've gotten grants. You've gotten donations. people can continue to donate. Are the cities or the county going to contribute financially? And who will own this once it's done?
It's going to be owned by the county. It's county land, but it'll be earmarked for this space. So once it's put in, it's not something that can be moved out.
Okay.
This is a transportation zone. It's called the Rapid Transportation Zone, which is meant for transportation solutions. So we are consistent with that.
Okay.
Back to the money. You're talking to someone who had never even been to a commission meeting in her life before last spring. So I'm learning a lot as I go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an appropriation from the state for $2 million, which was vetoed, unfortunately, by the governor, along with all the other trail projects in Miami-Dade County. Miami-Dade County is a tax-negative county, so we pay out more in taxes to the state than we get back, and we have to reverse that. In terms of growth and tourism and destination, Miami is an iconic name, and I love Orlando. My sister's there. I love Jacksonville. It's a great city. So is Tampa. But when you go to Europe, people say Miami.
Yes.
And that's Florida to them.
Yes.
So we're working on that. The governor, not the governor, the mayor, Jimenez, just announced that we have $3.25 million in the budget for the county for the next budget cycle, and that's earmarked for Brickell. We have $1 million in an existing grant that's with the Parks Foundation, and that's earmarked for Brickell. And we're working with the city of Miami for funding. That's the first city we approach because Brickell is in the city of Miami.
And who's in charge of oversight? It's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big project. Who's accountable to the people?
We have it's a group approach to governance. We are a 501c3, Friends of the Underline. We're a nonprofit organization, state of Florida, and we are autonomous.
Okay.
However, we were developing a second 501c3, which includes Friends of the Underline, Miami-Dade County, and the three municipalities, and that'll be our governance body.
Okay.
And, you know, and we had to address that. When you go to the state, they say, how are we represented? And
right.
The county says, yeah, but it's our land. And the municipalities say, but you're going to be asking us for money, and we have skin in the game. How are we doing this collectively?
Sure.
I would say that moving forward, because let's say we build in 2016, 2017, we're going to have to be programming that space and managing it and maintaining it.
Right.
And we're looking at long-term maintenance funding and how we can generate that. The nonprofit will be responsible probably for the bulk of that, and then it'll be funneled to the Parks Department for them to maintain.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's been so interesting to me that there's money for capital investment where you can build things, but there's no money for maintenance.
Right.
None.
Yeah, right.
And know that going in. We have looked at many, many playbooks for successful initiatives like this throughout the country, and we just take all those pages out of their playbook and don't try to reinvent the wheel. So we're modeling after those who have worked.
What are some of the ones, in addition to the High Line and Copenhagen, that you've looked at as models for excellence in creating something like this?
The 606 in Chicago just opened. And going quickly back to the High Line, half of their cost went to shoring up that deteriorating train track that was, you know, falling down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the balance went to putting the beautiful Garden in the Sky in. And it's only 30 feet wide. Our corridor is between 70 and 130 feet wide, the three times minimum the width of the High Line.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago 606 is, again, 30 feet wide. It's 3 miles long. It took them 8 years to build. The rail, it's above ground as well, is owned by the Department of Transportation. Most of their dollars came from transportation money. They have a 14-foot wide trail on it. I just visited it a month ago. On opening day, there were 50,000 people there in one day. So I think they were all waiting for this party.
Sure.
It was done by a group called Michael Van Valkenburg out of New York. They were the design team. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, they have, again, that specimen tree, experiential moments, small living rooms,
right.
And programming to make sure that it's active. But when I was up there one day on a Monday, everybody was up there.
Wow.
Bicyclists, joggers, walkers, moms and strollers. There's a trail in Dallas called the Katy Trail. which runs underneath all the infrastructure that goes above it. It's still at grade, which is ground level. Very successful. I mean, the businesses that abut it have thrived, if not exploded.
Right.
Then there's the Atlanta Beltline, Atlanta, obviously, which is a city that's, I think people would say that it's noted for suburban sprawl.
Mm-hmm.
I met the founder, Ryan Gravel, in 1999. He wrote his thesis paper in graduate school on how do we turn this old rail corridor into a 22-mile trail, park, art installation, and how do we transform the community, the way people walk, live, and move. They've built 6 miles, and it's already generated $2.65 billion worth of real estate investment.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is a huge future.
It
really is.
There's
it's
also
bright.
This amazing, amazing study being done right now by the Design Trust. In New York City, they have discovered 700 miles of underutilized land below bridges, expressways, all of that, you know, overpasses,
right.
All that leftover land that they want to turn back into the public realm.
Well, we certainly have our share of that, too, don't we?
We do. Yeah.
But you have other things in mind. We only have a couple of minutes
sure.
left. But you have other things in mind for the future beyond just the 10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we want to be the catalyst for the catalyst for developing a connected bicycle and pedestrian network throughout our community. On our website, we have a map of what could be. The dotted lines represent all of the proposed trails, and there's a lot more of those than there are completed. There's also a great initiative on the southern end of the future underline, which is the Ludlam Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ludlam Trail, that footprint goes from Dadeland North up to the airport. And they're working hard to get funding for land acquisition. They would have to buy a piece of that 100-foot-wide corridor to put a trail in, and then that would be developed through FECI. And we connect there on the north end. We connect to the Miami Riverwalk or the River Greenway.
Okay.
And that's being built out. Every time a developer buys on the Miami River, they have to put a riverwalk in place. And that's starting to happen. There's a lot of investment in the Miami River. And so we actually have, like Atlanta has that circle, we have a triangle of potential connectivity that could happen when Ludlam Trail Underline and the Miami Riverwalk are all completed. But we want to go further. How do you connect to the north? How do you connect east, west, south?
Mm-hmm.
And we have those conversations every day. So we're not just tunnel vision on the underline. We're looking at making Miami sustainable for the future.
How can the public be a part of this process with you? What if they have ideas or want to make a donation?
Our website is theunderline.org. It's a very simple join, first name, last name, zip code, and email, and you're registered. If you want to make a donation, it's about as simple, but it probably includes a credit card. There is no minimum. I promise you, every dollar that we raise, and we really are focused on those smaller donations because that's really going to get us to the end mile. I mean, I'm working hard on those million-dollar infrastructure, but we want to have to put those events on.
Right.
You know, they cost a little bit of money.
Right.
And so we've had lots of events. They're always posted on our website. You can email us at info@theunderline.org.
Okay.
We always respond. You can tweet us at @_MIA. You can like us on Facebook, and you can also follow us on Instagram. And I just got a notification. We have close to 1,000 followers on Twitter, 2,600 on Facebook. And I'm still trying to figure out how to work Instagram. But when we do, I think we'll have a lot more people engaged.
Just keep posting the pictures. And I want people to know, if you go to the website, theunderline.org, you've got renderings mm-hmm. of what it can look like, what it will look like.
Exactly.
After everything is done and mm-hmm. renovated. And it's a beautiful space that's been envisioned. And why anyone would not want to have that happen, I don't think there's any reason.
I think this will be, you know, one of Miami's most exciting public amenities.
Yeah.
I got a phone call from Travel and Leisure yesterday. They want to feature us in upcoming great parks. And I said, well, we haven't built anything yet. And he said, but you have so much momentum. And we recognize that in New York.
Wow.
And it's really because of people's excitement. The fact that they're talking about it and they're monitoring that. So guys out there, if you're listening, just keep talking, following, supporting us. And as we get into our Art Place grant, we're going to have lots of ways for people to jump in and have fun.
Okay. It's really, I feel like we're just at the beginning of something really transformative and exciting. And it's great to be here and watch this happening.
Thank you.
So thank you for taking the initiative to move this forward, and you can thank the communities, the municipalities, the mayor,
absolutely,
for jumping on board. And again, anyone who wants information or wants to participate, go to theunderline.org, and all the information about Friends of the Underline is there. Meg Daly, founder and president, thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. Appreciate it.